Welcome back to Mages and Murder Dads, the only show dedicated to the 10th part of Baldur's Gate 3. I'm Cameron, and I play Ticklevar the Sorcerer.
And I'm Danny, and I play Balthazar the Barbarian. I'm still a barbarian, because most of my levels are in Barbarian.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Like, if you've got most of your levels in Plumber, and you start tinkering with electricity.
Yeah, if you get your electrical certification, you're still Plumber.
Is that a certification? That's got to be something more than that, right?
I think that there's a certificate involved. I think there's a license involved.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, a license. That's what I'm saying. I feel like there's more than a certificate.
Oh, yeah. The certificate's just the first step to your licensure, I would imagine.
You got to take a test, you think?
I think that the idea is the certificate is the paperwork that shows you've passed the test.
Huh.
And the test is working your way up the electrical guild.
Is this like, I've heard they don't have electricity down in Balmora.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to go figure that out. And then you have to go and you find out there's like one rat that chewed one wire. You got to put it back together.
Yeah.
Like you go back, they're like, you've been upgraded to journeyman in the electrician's guild.
Yeah. Did you know that, oh my gosh, Vivek, he just found out that his whole temple's knob and tube.
Oh my god, they gotta rewire Vivek's temple.
Yeah.
Oh no!
That's
journeyman, this sounds like a job for you for some reason.
This is not Forgotten Realms. This is so far away from Forgotten Realms right now.
People have forgotten the Lord. And that's why they're not playing Morrowind, I'll tell you what.
It's true.
You tell us what we're doing. What are we doing today?
Okay, so you remember yesterday when we recorded the silly episode? And the whole reason is I wanted us to really, you know, I wanted us to get loose. I wanted us to be limber and fresh for this episode, because this is probably one of the most important episodes of the whole gosh darn thing.
No, is this a bit that I've forgotten about?
No. You remember yesterday, you did not want to record the silly episode. You were like, this is not a necessary episode to record.
Yeah.
And in fact, you were kind of a little upset, a little ticked off that we didn't just roll the content from last episode into the prior episode. You were ready.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. And I do remember that.
But I wanted to dedicate a full episode to some less important things so we could get the silliness out of our system. So we could get, it's like a nice stretch, right? It's mm-hmm. like, have you ever, before you worked out, done a silly little dance?
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why, look, you got to avoid injury.
Not me.
Yeah, you I'll embrace it.
Mm-hmm. I've got no issue. Let me be harmed.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the reason why we got the silly out of our system is this is we need to be on our A game, because, you know, this whole game, it's based on Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Based on 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons. And boy, howdy, this is the dungeon. We're talking about the dungeon in this.
I'm trying to think if I've seen a dragon, though, and
I saw a dragon in episode 1 in the intro cinematic,
but it's not here, you know. Don't you want a dragon here?
You want a dragon in your dungeon?
Yeah.
How'd it get in there?
Oh my god.
Yeah, look at the hallways around here, buddy.
That's right. Well, where are we going? Where is this place?
Okay, so episode before last, we went to Moonrise Towers and we chatted up a bunch of villains, and one of them, Zrel, kind of gave us a side hustle of tracking down an entity known as Balthazar. Not me, I'm Balthazar, but yep. Zrel's telling me track down Balthazar, because Balthazar himself is doing a a little work for old Ketherick Thorm. And we know that Balthazar's in the mausoleum, in the grand mausoleum. So, yeah, this is the point of the episode. And we're going to find out there's a whole gosh darn dungeon in that mausoleum. You know the dungeon's big when, like, already there are some games we've played where a mausoleum is a dungeon, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost certain that's the case in, like, both of the Planescape Torment games we played.
We only played one Planescape Torment game.
We played a Torment game, Tides of Numenera. I'm almost certain there's a mausoleum mm-hmm. dungeon in that one.
Oh, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And Icewind Dale, there were like a bunch of mini dungeons that were mausoleums, and then there was also a big dungeon that was a mausoleum.
So it sounds like you're saying you don't think that the places where the dead are buried should be haunted and therefore full of minions and goblins.
Oh, no, I think
it sounds like you're saying that's bad.
No, I'm saying that's natural. I'm reifying it.
This is the millennial generation destroying the values of those who came before by saying that they should not get to haunt. All the previous generations wanted to do from AO's, you know, mind to the millennial generation, all they want to do is work a solid 20 years, retire in the Forgotten Realms, get buried in a mausoleum where they will be resurrected as a ghoul or a goblin or a shadow or some other creature that they can haunt it for eternity. That's all they want. And you would take that from them.
Not me. I think Larian has undermined.
You would strip the economy of its gears.
Larian has undermined everything you've just talked about and the importance of it by putting an even bigger dungeon under the mausoleum.
Yeah.
And in that way, the mausoleum is now just like, oh, hold on. It's like the 7-Eleven that you stop at on the road trip before you get to your tourist destination.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, say more.
Did you run into anybody on the way to the mausoleum? Maybe right outside anybody. The mausoleum?
Yeah, the guy that we don't talk about. The demon fella. What's his name?
Raphael.
He's a devil.
Yeah, he's a devil, yeah.
Not a demon.
He's got a little bit of a dramatic flair.
Ooh!
It's a little deeper, I think.
Whoa. I'm kind of doing a walk in. Whoa. I can't believe. Whoa. Hey, whoa. I'm Raphael. Whoa. Yeah. I'm the emperor.
People didn't like that. You didn't.
I did. I thought it was great.
It. Yeah.
You know, when it was revealed that Christopher Walken was Baldur's Gate 3's emperor, I thought that was cool.
I thought that was strange because, you know, that's not a, like, Emperor of Where.
It's not a character we've met before yet. Yeah. It's a little weird, but.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what'd you talk to Raphael about?
Raphael just was, like, trying to get me to do even more work. He's telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
He said that there was a big bad infernal entity. And that I'd better kill it before it kills me. And that's kind of like already Balthazar's deal. So it's kind of not a notable conversation.
Yeah.
Right. Did you have Astarion in your party when you popped over here?
Did I have Astarion in my party? No.
Yeah.
No, not even a little bit. Did I do that? Because my party is Karlach, Lazel. The other one, Shadowheart.
Mm-hmm.
Ticklevar.
Yeah. So this is like Astarion's one chance to have any plot at all in Act Two, basically. Mm-hmm. Very weird. Very weird act for Astarion. If you're not doing the blood potion thing, which we did do,
Yep.
That episode actually released not too long ago. But
That episode will release 6 months from now.
That's right.
When
that's
we're recording
right.
this.
Yeah. If you don't do that and you don't have Astarion in your party for this conversation, Raphael, he might as well not exist, like, as a narrative entity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you pop into this grand mausoleum, and Balthazar talks to us over skull phone, big technology in the Forgotten Realms and necromancy mm-hmm. these days. It's a telecommunications revolution. The old skull phone. And he's like, I don't need any help. Go away.
Don't help me.
Exactly. But yeah, we find in here, we find a bunch of, you know, it's. We find out that Isabel is Kethric's daughter. And this is something we could have found out if we snooped around in some journals in the tower. But Balthazar didn't do that this time because I wanted to kind of keep the reveal here. And also, the tomb in that north wing, like, belongs to Isabel. So maybe she hasn't been interred, or maybe she was interred and she was brought back to life.
Yeah, it's just a preparatory.
We've all got one, right?
A preparatory hole?
Yeah, where's yours?
Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought about what might be underwater when I died.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've also got a separate plot at the top of Mount St. Helens, just in case. I've also secured a spot on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea is that you put it in a ground-based cannon and you fire my ashes at the moon to embed it in the perfect hole. Because, as you see, the moon does not rotate.
I've paid a specific, you know, there are all these like startups about this.
About shooting your ashes into a hole in the moon? Yeah.
About preserving your ashes in particular ways and like getting your ashes to desirable places. And the shooting your ashes to the moon, that's quite expensive. But one that I really like is
I pay like $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a kind of question, right? As the salesman put it, right? Like, what's the cost of peace of mind? And I could not fight against that. That was just ironclad to me.
So what I have paid for is way less expensive. Instead of the company being on the hook for transporting my ashes, the company safeguards my ashes. And every time there is a lunar or any other mission where, you know, there's going to be a person walking on an extraterrestrial object. So it could be Mars, could be in the future, even, you know, past our current horizons of technology. Mm-hmm. They will sneak some of my ashes into that astronaut's food.
Huh. Right.
And the idea is eventually one of these astronauts are going to die on that extraterrestrial body. Right. And that's where my ashes will be.
Just raw numbers.
Just raw numbers. Eventually, it's got to happen.
Yeah. Lance Bass won't make it back or whatever.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Oh, yeah. The Kethric's daughter.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
So that's why he wanted Isabel.
Yeah.
Which you might not know.
There you go. It turns out this feels like very... there's going to be I'm sure there's going to be a big monologue where he kind of like talks about his tragic villain backstory for us. But this is the classic Baldur's Gate 1 find out you're a ball spawn from a little written note situation. Yep. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
there it is. You can solve puzzle number one. Let's keep our puzzle counter here.
Boom. Yeah.
Puzzle number one, you have to, I guess, interact, hit a button below three paintings in chronological order.
Yeah, otherwise they cloud kill you.
Otherwise they, it's kind of like cloud kill or like Hunger of Hadar, like basically. It showed there are three paintings that shows, Moonrise Towers. It's a cool Salunite place. And then, Kethric Thorne, he's mourning the loss of his family. And there's Kethric Thorne. He's mad now. Now he's Char. Every time you lose your family, you go to the alignment chart. And whatever deity you're worshiping, you just pick like the enemy colors, right? Of whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it just happens. That's how it works.
You get in there. Did you learn anything other than the daughterhood from these paintings?
Nah, not really. You?
Nah.
Nah.
I don't do that.
That's not where Ticklevar is.
No.
Mm-mm.
Learning? Get out of here.
Yeah. And then at that point, the painting opens up, and then we enter the dungeon in this game. I don't want to... There's a part of me that, like, I don't want to spoil the fact that this is it. Like, this is the mega dungeon in the game, but it is. It just straight up ends.
Are there other dungeons?
There is one,
the biggest one.
It's the mega dungeon. There's not going to be a bigger one after this. And I think the biggest argument for, like, oh, there's a dungeon after this is probably a couple of small ones in Act 3 and, mm-hmm. like, arguably a larger one at the very end of this act, but none of them come close to this size, and none of them come close to the classic Baldur's Gate dungeon formula of pick up a bunch of keys in order to, like, progress, right?
Yep. Well, yeah, this goes back to what I was saying, you know, over the last couple episodes, and basically the kind of turn that happens in Act 2, which is like, this game feels more influenced by 5th edition kind of module, you know, or hardcover, you know, adventure book design,
yeah,
than it does Baldur's Gate design, right? And, mm-hmm. like, fewer dungeons, more set pieces, you know, I think is, like, the watchword of 5th edition, so... I'm not surprised by this, but yeah, this is the biggest one. It probably takes a couple hours if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, this definitely, just in terms of each, let me
emotional
back
about it?
Up. Yeah, I'm getting a little emotional, but let me give you the overall shape of this dungeon. This is a big old temple of Shar. It's actually called the Gauntlet of Shar. So the premise here is this is a place where, you know, worshippers of Shar, soldiers of Shar can come here and undergo the gauntlet in order to get the chance at becoming a Dark Justiciar. Right. Mm. So
finally.
But for, you know, for our purposes, there are, you know, four keys in the form of umbral gems, which are just nice purple spheres, and they're scattered around. Three of them are behind these trials, and one of them, the bonus one, is behind a little encounter. And we got to go around and we got to collect them in order to kind of progress through the dungeon and get to, like, the final level.
Mm-hmm.
The dungeon is, you can actually do a lot of this stuff in kind of weird orders. You're actually at the entrance, the very first thing you have to do is you have to do a little puzzle where there's a statue, and in order to, like, progress, you have to, like, get up to the statue, but the statue repels you, and the only way to, like, show the path, the little maze to the statue, is you've got to, like, turn off these braziers hanging. I think that they're called thuribles.
They're called thuribles?
Apparently, according to the Wikipedia.
Is this sorcerers.net?
Oh, that's the problem. Hold on. Let me see what.
Yeah, you're using the wrong website. Net
calls it
thuribles. Can't believe.
No, yeah, that's it.
Thurables.
Thurables, yeah.
Thurables. All right.
Yeah, they're hanging from the ceiling. Extinguish them. You can get the thing, and then that opens up the area. Did you, so one nice thing is
I have no idea what you're talking about. I never touched anything on a ceiling.
Yeah, you have to.
I don't think you do.
You do. And I mean, unless you... Yeah, I have no idea how you would do it otherwise. It's on the verge of shadows. There's a big old statue, and yeah, there are four levers, and you have to pull the levers to lower these thurables, these braziers that hang from the ceiling, in order to extinguish them. And it's only after you've extinguished them all that this path is clear, and then you can get to the path.
What are they called? Thurables?
Thurables.
I actually don't know where you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Like right after you get in?
Yeah, the entrance. It's called the Verge of Shadows.
Yeah, it's this map. Let's do a little comparison here. Is it this statue you're talking about? This one right here? Not in this room?
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything with a thing.
Okay, how'd you get to it?
You could break through a door on the left and like do a bunch of platforming.
Oh, there you go.
I just like repeatedly got my ass kicked by this like big purple statue.
And then you were like, well, I guess I just am not meant to go forward. I guess I have to break through a door.
I did. I broke through a door. That is my confusion. It's really interesting. I did. I'm looking at my footage here because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I was like kind of trying to figure it out. And looking at the thing, I did at one point target a thurible with an arrow. And I guess decided that didn't work. So yeah, you go through the door all the way on the left. And there's like
there's a little Underdark-esque mushroom zone.
Yeah, some mushroom. You can platform around all the mushrooms and then like completely avoid all this.
Somehow. There you go. Well, yeah, that is an option available to you. Thank goodness this is the year of our Lord 2023 when this comes out, I suppose.
And this game this episode? Right?
This game.
Yeah, I'm watching Karlach just hammer through the door. I'm just I'm working hard to get this door open, but it does work. Okay. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, thank goodness this game was made when it was, because I have to tell you, buddy, if this was Baldur's Gate 2, you're navigating to sorcerers.net to find out that you've got to pull these levers to get
I
the
would have had to learn about thurible.
You would have had to learn about them.
Instead, I would not have been able to avoid learning of the thurible.
Hey, you know what? What's wild is I do that and it opens the door you went through, and I ended up doing the mushroom platforming as well.
Huh.
Yeah. Funny it's how fun. That works.
It's more fun to do mushroom platforming.
Yeah, so cool. I like this little room. I love a cloaker.
Nah, huge waste of time.
You don't like the cloaker?
Nah.
You know what's bad
wait,
is
wait, wait. Like the monster?
Yeah.
You fought a cloaker?
Do not tell me you missed the cloaker.
I didn't do any of this.
Oh my god, you cloaker? Need to rotate your camera sometimes, my dude.
I rotate camera constantly.
You are not rotating your camera, because when you jump on the mushrooms, you get to this chamber.
This is wild how I solve this, by the way. You know, we've played quite a bit more after, you know, after the thing. Actually, can I tell you how I solved this? I'm looking at the full footage. I've now solved it.
Okay.
I completely broke whatever is intended here. I did all the platforming, came back, and then Tikkelvar just misty stepped into the circle.
Oh my god.
And then hit the little button. That's why I was confused about what I did. I dodged it in two separate ways.
You dodged it, and then you were like, hold on, I'm going to go back.
I think I'm sensing a cloaker in this direction.
you were like, the vibes are bad. I'm going to head back, and then I'm going to find a different way to bypass doing the thurables.
I didn't see this cloaker at all. That's sad. I think they're neat.
Yeah, it's rough. I will say that when you approach the cloaker from the mushrooms, you can, it is like visible. You see it in its ambush, right? Because you're up at the top of the mushrooms. If you approach this from the way in which, you know, if you didn't do the mushroom platforming and you like went into the gauntlet and then kind of went around the way in which it's kind of natural, you go into a room, a big mushroom room, with a very prominent treasure chest, just like in the middle of the room. And if you go down there, the cloaker jumps on you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and then, like, does a bunch of cloaker stuff and, like, summons a bunch of spectral clones and, yeah, it's fun.
I have fought this before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This sucks.
You don't like
cloakers are meant to be totally hidden. I mean, you can't do them in the it would be very hard to do cloakers as intended.
You would it would need to be a special event because the cloaker needs to be
like the beholder, or whatever.
You got to go. I think you go real old school and you just find a magical cloak, and then when you put it on, there's a cutscene of the cloak animating and decapitating.
No, but because a cloaker is not that big. It's bigger than that, right? Like a cloaker is the size of a 20x20 ceiling.
In the original cloaker, it's got to be small enough to mimic a cloak.
I don't think that's what they are. No, let's look here.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Let's look at this. I don't think that's how they were pitched initially. Because the big flying manta rays that sit on the roof and fall on you. I don't think they're like a cloak. Hold on. Let's look at the AD&D Monster Manual. Are you looking?
I'm looking.
Let's see. I think cloakers are in there. I'm scrolling. They're not. What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of the thing that is the there's one for the ground and one for the ceiling. You know what I'm talking about?
Stalactites and stalagmites?
That's right. Yeah, stalactites and stalagmites are what I'm thinking of. No, there's like a monster. That one that pretends to be the floor and one that pretends to be the ceiling. What is that called? I'm scrolling. There's an illustration in the Monster Manual. I feel very confident. So I guess a cloaker is a cloak. Why would it not be in like a chest?
Exactly. That's why. Cloakers were almost indistinguishable from large cloaks when they lay dormant, even appearing to have clasps and buttons.
Here's what I'm doing. This is what I'm thinking about. I got it.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of this thing. It's called the Lurker Above. Now, how did I get these confused with one another? I don't know.
Well, they both have eyes.
They both have eyes. They're both a big manta ray kind of
thing. Yeah, they do. When they are in there. Now, I think that the Lurker Above would have been more appropriate for the setup of this room. Right?
Yeah, now you can see why I was like, it'd be really hard to do in this game engine.
You were thinking about, like, ecologically, what would make sense for this encounter of, like, what would hide above a chest and then swoop down when you, like, get under it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cloaker
I'm
above.
Looking at footage of this cloaker just standing above. There.
Yes.
Hey, guys, you want this chest? I'm looking at it.
Don't mess with me. I look like a cloak that's just fluttering up here, but I'm not. I'm actually an entity.
I look like a shirt.
I that's the thing is, I think that's the failure of the cloaker, right? As a monster is you. I can think of so many other articles of clothing that's scarier to be animated. Pantaloons. The pantalooner.
Remember there were the silver pantaloons and the gold pantaloons that you could like, you know.
There was a big quest, yeah.
But yeah, across Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. What if you could import your thing into Baldur's Gate 3? But it was a monster and it ate you from the waist down.
Modders would like mod out the monster, and then they would just like they would have all their videos of like their how-tos or like the cutscenes between Shadowheart and Minthara, and they would both be wearing modded golden pantaloons that like accentuated their butts. That's the world we would live.
That's what you hate is when you accentuate the butt.
It's just not meant to be. It's not meant to be. Those are supposed to be carnivorous pantaloons.
It would be cool.
Carnivorous pantaloons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone mod that in for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you mod that in, I will put like special carnivorous pantaloons content at the end of the like every time you move in combat, it just bites you. Like bites you on the kneecaps. That's fun to me.
I think instead of the mouth being the waist, the mouth should be, it should have two mouths at the ankles.
And it's like biting you on the ankles?
Yeah.
That's good. Mm-hmm. All right, what else?
Yeah, so irrespective of how you do it, eventually you are going to get to a big puzzle fight room. You remember this? There's teleporting in. There's like it's the classic. I don't know if it is classic Baldur's Gate, but this felt like the most video game ass combat.
I like this fight. I like
teleporters appearing, and you got to kill the teleporters. And if you don't, people teleport in, and the fight gets longer.
I'm never mad about that. I'm never mad about like a resource management fight. You know.
That's
what it is. It's about action economy and like making decisions about, do you take down the enemies that exist or do you take down the enemies that might come in? I'm sure there's like an achievement for like killing every portal before anyone comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if that's true, but it feels like it should be true, right?
Yeah, I think that if mismanaging the resources results in death, I agree with you, or results in like a real setback. But the way the fight works out for most parties, and Balthazar, I've already done it, so I knew what I had to do. And even with my limited action economy, I was like, okay, you absolutely must prioritize these teleporters, and you especially have to prioritize the big one, because like a big enemy comes out of that one. I think my problem with it is that it feels like the punishment of doing it suboptimally is just, oh, you have to fight a fight that's 50% longer. And I didn't feel the resource constraints on that. It just felt like, oh, you it's longer now. And in a turn-based game, I'm like, okay.
Maybe you're too strong. Have you thought about that?
It might be that that there is going to be a moment in this act. It has not come. Where Balthazar's full tactical, tool chest has to be deployed, and I am absolutely just scraping by. And it was like, that was actually pretty fun when I was playing it, but that happens once. So,
yeah, you know, I think it's like fun to be like, oh, there's a new teleporter. How can I like maneuver my melee only person over there, because their turn is up now. How do I get them over to like knock the thing? Oh, it's fun. I wasn't mad about it. I actually watched the footage back and enjoyed it a second time.
Well, good. I'm glad. Balthazar takes care of this little fight. What's interesting is what's happening is that there are undead, like shades almost, of Sharon Justiciers puppeted by like an unknown entity, and we find out after this fight that they're like, oh my gosh, you're disturbing that, you know, these puppets, they're accusing you of disturbing the spirits here, right? And you know, other dark justiciers are coming through. Gotta get them. But after you resolve this fight, the door opens and you find out, oh, it's Balthazar, it's the guy who was on Skull Telephone. He was the one talking to you through these skeletons. And
why, hello, guy who is also me.
Tell me about Balthazar. What's his deal?
He's just a bad guy. He's a necromancer. He's rude. He's here doing something. He's looking for the night song.
He looks gnarly.
He's kind of, you know, it's really the Larian greatest hits of like an evil badass guy, but because he's an evil badass who's also gross, we got to make him like kind of fat a little bit. Like,
and a little bit of a dandy, maybe. I'm getting a little bit of that vibe from him.
Yeah, I don't have a strong feeling on that one. I mean, I can see it, but I didn't get that so much as I. Yeah, he's corpulent. Would be a word that would.
There's
be
a corpulent. There's almost a little bit of his dandy. Might be the wrong word. I think that there's a little bit of the contrast between I'm an absolute freak and I've like flayed my skin in the pattern of a pentagram on my face. But also, I talk like the kind of guy that has strong opinions about tannins in my wine. But like the necromantic equivalent of that.
Is it a pentagram, by the way, or is it a Star of David?
Oh, actually, I need to look at
it. I was looking at it, and it's a little unclear to me one way or the other. It's a star shape.
It's a star? Okay.
It's some kind of star shape.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of an indistinct one. We can maybe... I don't know. Yeah, look, I don't... All right, hold on. You ready for this?
Okay.
I'm going to take a screen cap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to draw some lines on the screen cap.
Okay.
look at this. All right, so we're like zoom. Oh, it's two triangles overlapping each other.
Mm-hmm.
But not in such a way as to be someone's religious symbol. Hold on, I've drawn some lines. You ready?
Okay.
This is it. Look at that.
Yeah, okay.
And in reality, because they extend up here, it's like multiple overlapping triangles. Look at this.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you the update here, right? So, like, it ends up, if you're only looking at one piece, it's kind of like, oh, what's going on here? But I think it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's a bunch of overlapping triangles on with it. But yeah, I don't, you know, that I would say that if there's a failure is the wrong word here, but if there's a stumble on Larian's part that you can really start feeling in this act is like it's like they have a fantasy ass fantasy vision of the world, and it's one that's locked in like 2002 sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little unfortunate. Being that, like, you can't play a fat character, but, like, every other evil person you run into is, like, corpulent and evil and fat.
Yeah,
and that's not literally true, but there's, like, several at this point.
I wonder, and, you know, I think that before I read some YouTube comments on some of our videos.
Love this necklace, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put it in. He's got, like a clasp or something over his cloak.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. I like that a lot. Anyway, you read a YouTube comment.
Yeah, but so I think that part of me would be like, well, hell, if you're making a video game about Dungeons and Dragons,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it's going to be stuck in 2002, right?
Yeah.
But also, we've just like, there have been some people chiming in
mm-hmm.
occasionally. And I don't, you know, I'm not entirely sure because I don't think either of us would call ourselves like big Divinity Original Sin experts, right?
No, not at all.
I know you've played more than I have, but I don't know if you've mm-hmm. like beaten them.
Yeah, I did. I played and beat the first one.
Okay. But it's,
but
it's
I understand the second one's quite different. So.
Gotcha. I don't, so I do wonder how much of it is also like an intermixing of like Larian's house style, which sometimes gets a little maybe it sounds like the reports I'm hearing is sometimes a little edgy, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, not entirely sure. But anyway, Balthazar's here. Necromancer. He's got a big hulking flesh golem Frankenstein, quote unquote, brother with him.
His brother. It's not a quote unquote brother. It's a brother.
Well, it's kind of like the ship of Theseus, brother. How much brother's there, right?
Baseline brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think sufficient enough. I didn't he, like, eat him in the womb or something? Isn't that the story? He's edgy.
He is edgy.
He's scary. He's scary.
But there are definitely, like, parts of his brother that were not, that his brother wasn't born with it. Like, you know how sometimes maybe she's born with it, but also no. Maybe she's a Frankenstein construction.
Well, but that's also the, that's what he says. If you ask him about it, he says, well, listen, why would we ever be limited to our, like, getting born in the womb? Like, that's not even, like, designed. That's just some stuff that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Get born a second time, he says. That's yeah. It's pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you might want to be born 2-3 times.
So, he gives you a job. He says, hey, I'm in this dungeon, too. And he is not imbued with the persistence and access to sorcerers.net that we have. And he's yep. like, I need you to do this dungeon for me. That's
I'm
basically
too sleepy.
It.
I'm too sleepy to go do this dungeon.
It's weird because he's like, I'm doing work for Kethra. I don't see him doing shit.
He set up his little base. How many bases have you set up?
None. That's the thing.
None.
I don't need to. I can literally hit a button and I get teleported to a pocket plane base. I don't need to set up a base ever.
I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, you can, there's an opportunity you have to ask him about his name. You're like, Balthazar, where have I heard that before? I failed the lore roll.
Uh-huh.
Did you succeed a lore roll on that one?
About like who is a Balthazar?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, he was a monk.
Mm-hmm. Is it implied that he like maybe took some parts of that Balthazar in addition to the name.
It's not implied. He says, I took his rib bones. Now, where'd he put them? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Balthazar got, like, liquefied when old Ticklevar, historical Ticklevar, took him down. So, I don't know what rib bones he's talking about.
Yeah, and that might have been, like, a disintegrate or a fireball or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was certainly a Melf's Minute Meteor.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, Balthazar... my Balthazar.
Mm-hmm.
Just to meet, like, after this conversation, I just killed this guy.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I was thinking, in retrospect, maybe I shouldn't have, but, like, there's some things where I cannot sacrifice the integrity of the character in order to serve, like, a narrative purpose of us having diverging playstyles. Because I kind of figured Ticklevar would also kill Balthazar right here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not doing this guy's work. I'm not letting this guy, like, have my name and continue to live. And I think that just before this, in the fight with the teleporter fight, I was able to get level 8. So that finally got me my third thief level, got me my, like, that was always the plan, to get the thief subclass. In order to get another enrage throw. So that did a lot of work in this fight. Additionally, I would say the thing that's really helping me out is, you know, I'm brain bugged, you know, I'm fully brain bugged. I'm more bug than brain at this point. And there is a brain bug skill point that you can invest in called Cull the Weak. And basically every time I damage an enemy, there's a check that's made, and if its HP after the attack is less than or equal to the number of brain bugs I've eaten, it just dies. So everyone's hit point is lowered by, you know, around this time, maybe 12 or so. But that number is only going to go up. It's going to be like in the 20s or almost 30 by the end of the game. So everybody's health total, as far as Balthazar's concerned, is substantially less than it looks.
What, in what way?
In that, like, when I attack, like, this guy, Balthazar, and I'm like, and I get him below 20... I don't have to attack him again. He dies because of my brain bugs. You feeling me?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Huh. It's, like, incredibly good, because a lot of enemies' starting health is right around my Cull the Weak number. So I literally just have to make contact with them and their heads explode.
Huh.
There is also another separate brain bug ability where when something dies, there's like a psychic aura that emerges from them that damages other things. And that can also trigger Cull the Weak. So sometimes you'll see footage of Balthazar just like throwing a javelin into a group of weak enemies and all of their heads explode.
That's bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
He's powerful.
I don't care.
If you don't like
him... I've never bugged one time, and I never will.
Mm-hmm.
Committed to not bugging.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see if there is any narrative price to be paid for these bugs, Balthazar's goblin.
Probably
blah, blah,
not.
Blah, 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 blah.
You'll probably have to kiss a bug one day.
And
Balthazar will make that face and go, no way. I have noticed in the footage, Balthazar, despite being extremely bugged, just looks like Balthazar.
Yeah, there's no...
No visual transformation in Balthazar's deal.
We're in Act 2. Yeah, there seems to be no visual costs paid. We'll see. So yeah, you kill Balthazar. Imagine this fight's pretty easy for Ticklevar as well.
No, he does a lot of dancing around, a lot of cloud killing.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It didn't, like, ruin my life, but it took a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It is really funny. Basically, Ticklevar starts every battle, especially ones with spellcasters, by throwing a big circle of ice on the ground. They all fall down. It's funny.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
It's funny to watch this, like, big bad necromancer just eat shit all over the ground.
Because once it is an automatic concentration saving throw failure when you go
prone. When you fall down and like bonk your head on the ground.
Yeah, or just your butt. Like a lot of the concentration happening with arcane energy, it's stored in the glutes.
Yep. So took him out. It is really funny when you get him down, he starts running away. Do you know that?
Yeah, he does. I think
that he get away. He didn't get away from me, but although he did kill Ticklevar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he like wished him to, and not literally, but he murdered him, and I had to resurrect Ticklevar after the battle.
So Balthazar went down really quickly for me because another bug brain power I have is once a day I can convert a regular hit into a critical hit on demand.
Mm-hmm.
So like after a long rest, like I can guarantee a crit. So between that and a bunch of other throwing and being able to like all of my enraged throws have a chance to like put somebody on their ass and make them prone. Mm-hmm. Balthazar goes down, but the ghouls are kind of a bigger issue because they have a chance to paralyze. And when you've only got one character and Barbarian Rage no longer protects you from paralysis, that's kind of a problem. So I have to like reload a couple times just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, otherwise, Balthazar dead. Oh, what could have been? We've both deprived ourselves of a really interesting climax of this dungeon in a lot of ways. I think that for both of our other playthroughs, like our first playthrough, I don't think either of us killed Balthazar at this point, right?
No.
Yeah. So no. We'll chat about that after we got to get some spheres. We're almost 40 minutes into the episode. We haven't gotten a single sphere. Let's get some spheres. Let's do some trials, right? Are you focused? Are you caffeinated?
In my life right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your mind needs to be a razor, right? Because we are.
I'm in it.
I'm in it. Let's talk about the soft step trial.
What the fuck is that?
It's the worst trial. Hide.
Okay, let me.
It's the worst trial.
All right. We're about to talk about what? Three trials? Four trials?
There's three trials, yeah.
Okay. You can brute force them all.
You can.
And get tricky and weird.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I basically, this is like a little, you have to do this to become a Dark Justiciar. You don't know this. Balthazar doesn't know this, but Shadowheart is like, I want to be a Dark Justiciar too. Because that's like her whole deal, right?
Sure.
And so she's like, let me put my blood in the thing. Because for each of them, you have to activate it by like, you know, giving up a hit point's worth of blood or whatever. So like, there's this little ritual that goes on beforehand and then you complete it together. Presumably, if she's like a trickster, she still, you know, the trickster cleric or whatever, she probably has skills and abilities that would make her good at all this stuff. I basically just ran all of my party members through this at the same time. And even though it, like, whenever you're seen, it kind of resets and stuff, you can basically brute force it because not all shadows can see everything all at one time.
Sure.
So you, like, run through, you hit a button, you go get a thing, you come out, you're done.
Yeah, soft step trial I found to be weak sauce. Mm-hmm. I did not feel tested, but I think that what I saw from this dungeon was maybe a first version of this was actually challenging. And what they found was there was absolutely no way to thread the needle on it being actually challenging, but not madly frustrating if you did not do it one particular way. And so what we're left with is, you know, a bunch of trials that are easily kind of brute forcible or otherwise like just kind of like you can figure it out a couple of different ways. And I think that both makes this less frustrating, but it also makes it a little less satisfying and makes it feel a little bit more time sinky, to be honest.
Yeah. I think these are like fun little things, you know, each of these trials. It's a hard needle to thread.
It might be difficult,
but not impossible.
Yeah. My favorite one is the Indiana Jones Last Crusade trial, the Leap of Faith trial.
Were you just jumping a hole?
Yeah. So, what is the ultimate leap of faith in these games, Cameron? I want you to think about outside of even Baldur's Gate 3.
Character creation.
character creation, sure, but let's say you are, it's Baldur's Gate 2, you've got to navigate a couple of maps to like get to Dyarny's Keep, right? Mm-hmm. You've kind of half explored most of the maps between here and Dyarny's, and you're tempted, right? What is the quickest way to get from, you know, the east side of a map, or the west side, I guess, if you're going to Dyarny's Keep, of the map to the east side? Well, it would be to just like drag your camera over to the edge and mm-hmm. click, right?
Yeah. Easy.
That is a way you can solve the Leap of Faith trial. You can just click on the platform at the end and your character will auto navigate on the invisible pathways to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That being said, this area is glitchy and there's a lot of like weird death planes and like sometimes your character will when they're walking on the invisible pathway, they will like half fall down and then just teleport to the beginning. So it's kind of weird. But yeah, it's basically just there are invisible pathways. You have to navigate from the beginning until the end to get the sphere. And yeah, one of the ways you can do it is just by clicking the end. But you can also like do weird jumps and parkour and such.
I would not.
Did you just teleport to like the middle and then teleport to the end? I think they might prevent you from teleporting to the very end, right?
I don't know actually what I did because this so quickly left my head, because the trials that I can think about are this one and the doubling one. And also I think I got tricked in my brain because the library is not a trial.
Correct? The library is not a trial. It's purely supplementary. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so anyway, it's fine. And then there is the self-same trial, which summons a clone of you. Balthazar just took off all of
his... Well, no, it summons a clone of your whole party.
But yeah, it summons
Balthazar,
a clone of you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what Balthazar did is took off all of his armor and unequipped his weapon and initiated the trial by like giving some blood. And then I put
classic,
all that stuff.
The classic gamer's duplicate murder.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I put on all my stuff and then I murdered him. I think that there's an interest. My first playthrough, and I wonder if they patched it out. There's some really interesting possibilities of duping items in this area. I was able to like, yeah, you remember the blood of Lathander?
Mm-hmm. I've got that. Shadowheart's got it right now.
Yeah, it's good. So I did this on my first playthrough and somebody had that equipped and I like disarmed them and like sent that onto the ground and then picked it up. So I wonder if they've patched that, but you can definitely, there's definitely, if unless they've patched disarming, some opportunities to like get some dupes of some weapons here.
That's cool.
Yeah. How was your party? Did Ticklevar send some big old fireballs your way?
No, this is a pretty weird thing. You know, I've done this a few times, because the first time I did it was actually really difficult. I had a hard time with it. And so I was like playing around. I don't know. I got Ticklevar in like a weird little spot where I could just like from a distance shoot everyone with magic missiles. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I needed to take down Ticklevar first because like sorcerers are powerful, especially if the computer is playing as them and they're not shackled to me doing it.
Yeah, and also the computer knows whether something is like gonna hit or miss in an area effect spell. Like it has perfect knowledge about that.
It's also sometimes like paying attention to more things probably.
Right? Sure.
And so I was like, well, I get rid of him first. So I like shoot him like right at the, you know, edge of effectiveness. Shoot him, kill him with magic missiles. And I go, okay. Yeah, I like moved a little bit forward and
It did not trigger combat.
No. I don't know why. But so I was able to just kind of like inch up for it, like blow every spell slot I had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But and like convert my wizard points back into spell slots, and so I killed I think everyone except for Lazelle, maybe. And then like, you know, 4v1 on Lazelle. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that worked out that way, but it did. And so I had a pretty non-standard, you know, experience, I would say.
Yeah. So those are the three trials. There's
but I like these things, but I just want to say, I like like a party, you know, make your party, make you fight your party.
Oh, yeah, it's classic. Or just the, even if it's not a clone party, just the counterpart, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've always talked about in Baldur's Gate games, finding the enemy adventuring party that fills all the roles. And it's kind of like doing something different, something that like a dozen goblins aren't doing. As far as like an encounter, it makes you think about the texture of the battlefield and like the roles those people are playing. And when they can do the thing you've been doing all along and they like deploy those tools, it's a cool narrative moment, you know, sparingly, I think.
Yeah.
So the final sphere is over on the other side of the temple. I had a really unique experience with this encounter. Where I never got a cutscene because I was trying to outsmart things. But if you go along a hallway, you will see a displacer beast, right? You see this giant panther with big old tentacles on its back.
Mm-hmm.
And the displacer beast is like luring you somewhere. But Balthazar doesn't have it. And I throw a javelin at it because I'm in javelin throwing mode all the time, right? Or rather, my returning pike plus one. Occasionally, I've got a lightning jabber, like something I picked up off some Kotoas. But I've got a suite of sticks that I can throw.
Yep.
And I trigger a gigantic combat in a place where that, like, way before that combat is supposed to happen. Where a bunch of infernal beings and a giant demon, all like devil, all attack me. And I have to say, there's some footage here. It takes way too long. It is probably the optimal way for me to do it as a solo character, because this is like a really big fight. And but I have to say that it really made me, this is kind of the first time in the game that it really made me think. And of course, right, as somebody who's done game design, you probably knew this quite transparently. The environment's a part of the fight. Right. You design the fight around the environment. You're never like designing the fight in a vacuum and then just putting it in an environment.
No. Yeah. I would say you design the fight and the environment at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all one thing.
Yeah.
So when you take a fight and you move it like 200 yards away from where that fight was designed.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fucking work. Like
probably not.
All the mechanics work. Right. Like the enemies take their actions. You take your actions. But if it's just a big hallway, it is completely deflated. Like the dynamics of the way that like the drama, the back and forth, it completely does not land. So Balthazar is just way back in a hallway and like a dozen people are coming at Balthazar and it's simply it didn't work from a game design perspective, and it was kind of myself to blame, but also like you can like there's no reason to even allow the fight to be triggered by throwing that pike at the displacer beast.
This is definitely also done this before.
You've done this
in my previous playthrough. Yeah. I like cast a spell at the displacer beast and it like triggered the whole fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did not do it this time.
Gotcha. So you did this the intended way.
Yeah,
I imagine. Mm-hmm. Tell me about
how that went. Talking it. Craig.
What's his name?
yeah, this fellow's name is...
Craig.
You know, it would be Craig. We were warned about Craig. It's Your gear.
I went and fought with... So you go and you're there and you're like... He's like,
hold up a moment.
He doesn't talk like that, but you go underneath him. You're like chasing the little displacer beast. And he says like, hold on. And he's up above you. And he's got like a bunch of little, lemurs. What are they?
So he's an Orthon, right?
Yeah. But what are his buddies?
His buddies are Maragon Legionnaires.
Maragons. They're like little, devil creatures.
Yeah, with masks on.
So he's up there, and he says, hey, guess what? I've been locked here by a contract. And in my mind, I'm going, I spoke to Raphael. He told me, kill this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Question mark. I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah.
This is me simulating my actual experience of the game of going, Raphael said something about this.
Okay. It really was like the case of both Ticklevar and Cameron when Raphael started talking.
I wasn't really listening to Raphael. He's up here, and he's got his little crossbow on me, and your gear says, hey, I'm locked here, you know, and I've been puzzled out. And do you have the text of his, like, contract that he signed?
Yes. So I have the quest pulled up.
So you can basically say, he's like, hey, I'm locked in by this contract. And you can be like, well, tell me what the contract is. So he gives you a little poem. Here's the poem. Spill all the blood sworn in the night. Silence all prayers. Smother each rite. Maybe there's a little bit more. Hold on. I'm looking at the footage here. Is there any more?
Wander Shar's halls, hungry to slay, leave no justiciar alive to obey. And then the final stanza, leave none to hear it, then be set free. This song is your oath, swear it to me.
Yeah, so basically his contract that he made with presumably Raphael is kill all the dark justiciars in the Sharn Temple.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's that little bit at the end.
There is.
And so what Ticklevar suggests is, well,
Maragon Legionnaires, buddies.
They heard it and saw it. And he goes, oh, you're right. And he murders them. Or actually maybe de-summons them or something, right?
He orders them to kill themselves.
Oh, that's right. He does that.
So, like, there's actually a cool cutscene of, like, they all have halberds, and there's two that just, like, in sync, swing their halberds at the other's head, and they, like, simultaneously land, and then they turn into infernal ash.
Then you could be like, well, I'm still here. And you go, well, your displacer beast is still here. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. My beloved cat murders it. And then he's still there. And you can go, well, you heard and saw what you did, didn't you? So you would have to kill you. And then this buffoon does it to himself.
He does, in the grand tradition of Act Two and charisma persuasion checks.
Yep.
You can get this guy to do himself in.
Yep. And the idea is, like, that would complete the contract and liberate him.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out later in the game if that worked or not.
Sure. Now, here's the thing. I was right there with you in terms of my understanding of the contract. Oh, yeah. Raphael did you dirty, right? Raphael did you dirty because he included this line in the contract that, like, precluded your success.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. This is just, like, what Ticklevar said.
The dialogue. So my first playthrough, I was right there with you. I was like, yeah, that seems, you know, in line with what a devil could do, right?
Sure.
Put the devils in the details.
Yeah.
However, I need to ask you something. This is something I never experienced in any playthrough, and it was only when preparing the show notes and, like, making sure I had all the names right, looking through the sorcerers.net, that I found this. Did you interact with the rats in this dungeon?
No.
No.
Okay. I mean, no, you know what? I did, but I didn't talk to them. I just saw that you could talk to them. They're the ones, right? Isn't there, like, they're the ones who can see?
It's even wilder.
Okay.
There was one surviving Sharan soldier, Dark Justiciar, in this dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Raphael goes to this guy. So Raphael both simultaneously takes on a job to kill all these Dark Justiciars, contracts out your gear to do it.
Yep.
And then takes the opportunity of, okay, I've like contracted your gear to do this. Then he makes contact with one Dark Justiciar in particular. He talks to this Dark Justiciar, and this Dark Justiciar's name is Lirthendor. And he tells Lirthendor, look, There's an infernal being going to come and he's going to kill you. He's going to kill all of them. The only way you can survive is by reciting the words in this book. And he gives Lirthendor a book called One Becomes Many. And Lirthendor recites the words in One Becomes Many. And he disperses his soul among all the rats in the dungeon. And that is why Jurgir is stuck in this dungeon. It is not because of the final stanza. It's because there is still a dark justiciar in the dungeon. All of the conditions of the contract haven't been met because Lirthendor is alive and he is still, providing rites to Shar. That's why the rats are all gathered around like the altars and the statues of Shar. They're still like engaging in religious activity.
Cool.
So there's this whole quest where you can like interact with the rats and turn Lirthendor back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they completely missed it. Just absolutely never engaged with one tenth of this.
No.
So I think that there are other ways. So like there are other ways to like break Jurgir's contract without having him, kill himself or killing him yourself. Yeah.
Neat.
Interesting. Just totally, totally missed it.
Well, good luck to the brave internet denizens who have done that.
Yeah, well, absolutely wild. But that's the final orb. That's you find it at this giant bed throne made of corpses. I imagine like all of the Dark Justiciars. It's kind of like too much flesh for them to be the Dark Justiciars, though, right? Like it's been a long time. It's been like 100 years. Or something.
No. I don't know if it's been 100 years.
Yeah, how long has your gear been in here, right?
How long has it been since the Kreish, that monastery, got binged up?
Because
the Sharns did that, yeah?
Yeah.
Was that the Time of Troubles or before the Time of Troubles?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I don't either. I'm not like lore brained on this issue, but it would be nice to know like what the hell.
I hate to tell you, my dude, but I know for a fact that I've done some stuff in Act 3 that is going to make you livid about the timeline. You're going to be incensed.
I'm going to be mad
about Forgotten Realms chronology. I'm just planting that seed right now. we get our final orb and that lets you plug all the orbs into an elevator, and then you can take the elevator and there is a library, and basically this area exists for Shadowheart's quest, right? Mm-hmm. This is like what's at this point, you've completed the trials. But Shadowheart still like, is she chattering about becoming a Dark Justiciar? What's the deal?
You know, she's really not as vocal as you might assume on a lot of these things. And maybe I'm just not talking to her enough. But a lot of it's just like, this is the challenge. This is what I'm prepared for. This is, you know what I mean? There's some of that stuff.
Yeah.
There will be more in just a moment. But in terms of going through the dungeon, it's mostly like, hey, let me be the one to like do these trials. Or, you know, to sacrifice my blood to do it, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
The other interesting thing about it is that what we are doing here is completing what started in Act 2 or Act 1, which was people were going down underneath that temple to find the Night Song.
Yeah, because they got a contract or a bounty from a wizard in Baldur's Gate named Larokan.
Yeah. And lo and behold, that was the wrong temple.
Yeah, you know, look, I think that they got the they were in the right place in the same way that like if you fly to Birmingham, Alabama, looking for, the 1996 Olympic Stadium, and you flew there from Singapore. Yeah, I guess you were more or less you're in the right place, right?
Yeah, yeah. You didn't quite hit the nail on the head there. But
yeah, this is rounding. Like, You put your thumb on the globe, you're probably occluding the target, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, but basically, I think that is funny. They just happen to be in the wrong spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but here's the thing. Everybody's looking, so this night song, right? Ostensibly, when you look at that contract or that bounty from the wizard, you're like, some weird magical artifact.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
By the way, there's a library here.
Yeah, that's so next step is
we
library.
We do not need to talk about it. There's a library here. The library has an enchantment on it that if you go into it, you can't speak.
You hate it.
It's just like a little side area to go into.
It is, but there's a very important thing there. You have to do
what's
it.
What's in there?
You got to do that it. Because the Spear of Night is there.
Oh, that's right. You do get it at the end.
Puzzle. This is kind of the final part of the Dark Justiciar trial is you must, have a specific weapon in order, like, to confront the Night Song. That's all you know. And apparently this spear is something you might need to use to, like, kill something in order to, like, complete a ritual.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get to a point of no return. This is kind of, it is absolutely wild, but at any point in, the game as we've discussed until now, you could have just popped back to the wilderness area of Act 1 and done stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You could be like, oh, wait, I didn't take care of that hag. You could, like, pop back, kill the hag right now. But there's a pop-up when you get to a big old pool. And that pop-up says, hey, you better resolve any quests because this is going to be a point of no return. You won't be able to come back. And that's not just about going back to Act 1 areas. That is any unresolved Act 2 quest, right? Whether it's like saving the tieflings from the prison or helping Howson figure out the curse, the shadow mm-hmm. curse. But yeah. You pop in there, and where are we?
When we go to the library, or when we go to the little portal thing?
The portal, yeah.
Well, it's like not even a little portal. It's like a little...
it's a waiting pool. Yeah,
it's like walk into it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Shadowheart has things to say.
Ah, yeah, I figured.
She says, let me meditate. And I say, okay. She's like, I've been preparing this my whole life. I'm going to become a Dark Justiciar now, blah, 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 blah. I have not spent any time or effort becoming Shadowheart's friend. So some of this is coming out of nowhere.
Mm.
A lot of this is like, oh, you're like way into your religion, huh?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like there is that level of like, huh, this is like you, huh?
Yeah, have you ever had like a best friend, not a best friend in college, just like a college, somebody in your dorm, right?
Uh-huh. You move from best friend to someone in your dorm.
Well, it can't be your best friend, but it's like your best college friend. But you would still say your best friend's like your high school friend because, you're a freshman in college. You're still getting to know some of these people, but you're in close proximity with them. You got a couple classes together. You go, you're talking about Russian. You're like, I don't want to rush, but they're like, no, I do want to rush. And then one day at the, you're at a party mm-hmm. and they turn to you and they're like, You know what really has my heart? It's not that cute girl over there. It's mm-hmm. Char. Char does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Charin.
Yeah,
that's
I'm Charin.
That's my deal.
It's my entire identity. I'm not a math major. I'm a worshiper of Char, and I want to be a Dark Justiciar.
And
does that ever?
I do math to get this degree, but my real thing is Char.
Yeah. The degree is, that's a tool that I want to use to serve Char.
Yeah.
I want to get into a big four accounting gig so I can do Char's work there.
Yeah, it's like the most important thing you could do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's basically just like that. And she like goes down in there. You go into it. You're in the what do you call it?
The Shadowfell. This dimension has had a couple of different interpretations over...
It's a capacious dimension.
Yeah, you know, I remember looking at some Wikipedia articles on the Forgotten Realms and like the cosmology of the Forgotten Realms, and a lot of it came up in the episode where we're talking about the Githyanki, right?
Yeah.
And like the astral sea, right?
Yeah.
The astral plane and like all of the weirdness. And I think that it's really interesting because like there are different versions of the cosmology and how the different dimensions or planes are overlaid on each other or like somehow geographically oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shadowfells had a couple of definitions or a couple of like different associations. I remember in my first exposure to it, it was like the undead. Like that, it was like the undead mm-hmm. plane.
I think that's still, yeah.
Still, like,
I mean,
heavily.
I don't know if they're undead necessarily, but I think of like the negative energy stuff.
Yeah. So that was also, there was like the negative energy plane versus yeah. the positive energy plane.
Mm-hmm.
The bad vibes
yeah,
plane. Its depiction here is like, yeah, I guess the shadow plane. I guess Char has a home base here.
Don't need to think about it too hard. Yeah. I you know, it's like her storage locker.
Mm-hmm.
Char's storage cubby.
Mm-hmm.
You run all the way down there. You have to, like, jump. It's very cool. You, like, jump from thing to thing because gravity's different in the Shadowfell.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go down there. Lo and behold, there's just an imprisoned, what are these things called?
Aesimar?
Aesimar. Like a half godling. Like a godling. Demigod. Mm-hmm. This is the she's the, what do you call it?
She's the Night Song.
The Night Song. It's a person.
It's a person.
Now, we didn't learn anything about any of the mechanics here because we killed Balthazar.
Yeah, so this is the thing. If you didn't kill Balthazar, you are what you would meet here is Balthazar would be down here. He's like, oh, thanks so much for opening up the door. I was, of course, you know, just waiting for you to to do everything. And then I popped in before you ever got down to the elevator. Don't think about mm-hmm. it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So Balthazar would lore dump you. So and explain how all of these things work. In the
basically,
absence of Balthazar, you are relying on having to talk to the Night Song herself.
Yeah, I didn't ask any of these questions. It did not seem important to learn the mechanics of the video game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while I was doing this. The short of it, right, is the Night Song is imprisoned here, and they are siphoning off the Night Song's Aesimar powers, god powers, to keep Kethric Thorm immortal.
Yeah.
That's it.
It is, yeah, so, and
there's more to it a little bit, right?
Well,
and also, the Night Song is in a relationship with Isabel.
I would say, let's start from the top. The Night Song is Saloon's daughter.
Yeah, well, all Aesimar, right? Aren't they all the child of a god?
They are, but specifically, this one is the child of Saloon, right?
Yes, right.
So, we have a situation where that, you know, this Aesimar, is
let me hit you with this. This is from the Realms wiki. They were often but not always descended from celestials and other creatures of pure good alignment, but while predisposed to good alignments, Aesimar were by no means always good. So there's actually, they're not just godlings in a general sense, they are specifically in fifth edition the descendants of good gods or godlike things.
Well, this is not the first
Saloon.
This is not the first Aesimar we've dealt with in Mages of Murder Dads.
There's one in Throne of Ball? One of the...
I specifically remember one from a little game by Beam Dog.
Oh. Not
I'm
Karavec,
having to look up her name.
Yeah. 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 Her.
No, not that one.
Siege of Dragonspear, bad guy.
Well, I did that, and then it was Belafet. And it's like, no, the... Oh,
no,
Kalar Argent. Kalar Argent.
Yeah.
So,
but
it's
interesting. She wasn't a Ballspar, right? She was just like a patsy.
Correct. She's a... ASMR. And she is like an ASMR that decided, you know what, in order for me to do the ultimate good, I gotta like do a bunch of war crimes.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
I get it.
So anyway, it's really interesting. I started playing Dungeons and Dragons, and my involvement with like this entire intellectual property began at a time when ASMR and tieflings were like the same power level.
Mm-hmm.
Like a tiefling was half devil in the same like in the same power as a as an ASMR, and for whatever reason Wizards of the Coast has decided, you know what, ASMR, that's not an appropriate like player character to just put into the player's manual.
Yeah.
Tieflings though, yeah, sure. Interesting choice. I guess people like playing a little person with a little badge streak in them, or like some kind of heritage that they're trying to overcome, or somebody that's been disenfranchised socially and that they're
trying to work against. It's fun to be like a little godling, good or bad.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know why the opposite isn't true, that people want to, you know, play a haughty ASMR paladin.
I think that's true too. I think people also like to do that.
Yeah, but then they've made a decision. You can be a tiefling, but you can't be an ASMR.
Oh, I see, Richard. Wait, at all?
Well, I mean, in the splat books, you can be a bugbear, but I'm talking about it like kind of in the canonical like player races, quote unquote, that are offered.
They showed up in Mordenkainen's book.
Mm-hmm. Along with a bunch of other monsters, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that was the... Well, Mordenkainen is, I think you're right, some monsters, but also just like planar beings in general.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like it's less like we're putting it in the bugbear book and more like, hey, do you want to be like, do you want your game to have Planescape vibes, but we're not ready to do it yet? Mm-hmm. You know, I think there was a little bit of that in Monsters of the Multiverse, because that's less. I also think it's a little bit different, too, in terms of like you and I live in a world of like. Of the third and 3.5 edition splat book, like,
yeah.
Radical Expansion Universe, where like they publish an infinite number of shitty books, just to be blunt,
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like you could find anything. Fifth edition, in my mind, is a lot more controlled and I don't know, coherent, you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like a lot of things are just added in willy-nilly. And so the Mordenkainen books were promoted pretty heavily to give basically things that people really wanted out of the player experience that they were yearning for. So
yeah.
I think that's part of it. I don't think you can put ASMR in your like player's handbook.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about this character, but we've been calling this character Nightsong. This is Dame Aelin. This is Dame Aelin. She is the daughter of Saloon. She is the lover of Isabel. And basically, Kethric Thorm is using her as kind of a weird jury-rigged phylactery, basically. Mm-hmm. He has trapped her in the Shadowfell. And it's kind of like her... I like the ecological interaction, or like the ecological situation of Dame Aelin. Dame Aelin is simultaneously, vis-a-vis the plot, mm-hmm. a figure that has been like, look, you're Kethric Thorm, you betray Saloon, your daughter is in love with Saloon's daughter, you take your daughter's lover and symbol of your former deity and imprison her and use her as a way to be immortal.
Yeah,
and simultaneously,
notably, it's not, she's mm-hmm. not like a phylactery. She's like a battery.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is like more fun to me, actually, right?
Yeah.
Like there's something cool, because it's not like, you know, where his soul, when he dies, it doesn't like flee there to like gain power.
No, she's just trapped there, and she continues to charge him. She continues to, her immortality has been arcanely linked to his life force.
But this also has that I think you're right. I think it, like, all the pieces kind of fitting together are very cool. But the flip side of that is like it is is the effect I was talking about of the kind of adventure manual, you know, the fifth edition adventure book kind of vibe, where it's like
it's all so perfectly lined
yes,
up.
Yes, it is just a perfect Lego set of like yes. interconnections that you could find out all the pieces of in different ways, which is partially why they're, I think, why the adventure books are designed that way, right? Is that when you play them, you're not always going to get everything, so you need all these different pieces. But yeah, so we get
correct.
All that
and then
her.
the other half being the ecological part is, okay, well, if you're going to store your arcane immortality battery somewhere, you might as well store it in the Shadowfell so that Char, your new deity, can use this as a rite of initiation, because you know how you become a Dark Justiciar? You come down here and you kill this daughter of Saloon, who cannot die. So she can repeatedly be killed by would-be Dark Justiciars.
Oh, no, I don't think that's it.
You don't think that Dame Aelin is a integral part of the Dark Justiciar ritual?
No, I don't.
You think it's a cult? Okay, I'm interested.
Well, because she was only imprisoned like when Kethric Thorne became like an immortal guy. Like 100 years ago or whenever all like the Char War stuff happened, right? Mm-hmm. I think going to the plane itself was the Dark Justiciar thing.
And maybe you think there was just like some Saloonite or other sacrifice that had to be made, and you would use the Spear of Night to kill them?
I haven't thought. No, I don't even think the Spear of Night thing is necessary. I think that's the additional stuff. I think it's like do the three trials, go into the thing, get charged up with Char energy or fight an enemy there, and in the absence of the Dark Justiciars, right, like after they've been killed like 100 years ago or whatever, they have repurposed this into a prison. So I don't think she was like part of it to begin with at all.
Okay, that works. I think I like my version better.
I don't, because it means that she has like, it means that if Dark Justiciars could not exist before she was imprisoned.
Well, I mean, I think that there could have been a ritual beforehand, but I just saw her as, once they had her, why not incorporate that as a part of the ritual? I don't know.
But I don't think they had her. Like,
I mean, and this is my problem. I have no idea about the timeline of these events. I just
don't. I think I've played this game three times.
I don't know when things happened. I don't know the actual cause and effect of the Shadow Curse Lands, etc., because I just think that this entire act is disinterested in the history of the place you're in, and it is about the present.
Well, I don't have an issue with that part, right? Because it's like Dame Aelin is okay. I think this is the timeline. I think it all lines up, right? In the past, there was a war between Selenites and Sharans that lived essentially next door to each other, right? One in the Overland Route, one in the Act Two place, right? So, like, what became the monastery versus the thing? Oh, no, that was the Temple of Lathander, so I don't know, actually.
Yeah, I'm looking at the wiki on Dame Aelin, and there's literally a paragraph in the history section that says, so Kethric was distrustful of Aelin's intentions. Aelin believed he was threatened by her and Isabel's love, blah, 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 blah.
So this is when he's a cleric of Saloon still.
Yeah. So after Isabel died, a grief-stricken Kethric turns to Char, and under the influence of the Lady of Loss, he and Balthazar lured Aelin to the Shadowfell, where they trapped and caged her. And look, this is a community editable wiki, so who knows? It might be that everybody just kind of assumed what I assumed, but the next paragraph is, while trapped in the Shadowfell, Aelin's immortality was fed on by Kethric as she was murdered again and again by Char's Dark Justiciars as part of their trials to become anointed.
Maybe there's a thing, where was Kethric this whole time that the Sharan force was
I guess
he disappears for a long time and then the Dark Justiciars go away, but that would mean that like all this has been happening for like hundreds of years.
I think it has, because remember there's this big mural in the Emerald Grove that shows the first Sharan army that was defeated, and then a long period passes, and
but Halsin was a part of that army.
Yeah, but he's old.
How far ago could it be?
He's an elf. I don't know. How long do they live?
For some reason, I thought he was like a half elf.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It fundamentally does not connect for me. Yes. And I'm sure
everything you're saying makes sense. I don't think that I have an authoritative grasp here, and now I feel even less like I do. But yeah, but you're 100% right. And it's less to me, I think, about that the focus is the present, and more that it is the focus on the player experience. Right,
yeah.
Which maybe are the same thing, but I think that like Larian is not interested necessarily in clarifying all this, and maybe there's another step here too, which is like they know fans will do it, so why would you bother?
Sure, I think that it feels like in Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, there was a different approach.
A million percent, yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that Baldur's Gate 3... This is, I think, our first running into how does the lore work? How does this you know, where was this in relation to the spell plague or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
These kind of questions, because look, when you take the Forgotten Realms, the whole damn thing is like the absolute keystone of this is Gary Gygax underlying and bolding, you know, there is no meaningful campaign without strict time tracking of time, right? And I think that that the Forgotten Realms leans into that and be like, this is a world. There are like materialist forces that operate on it, and like history is tracked, and all of the history kind of the Forgotten Realms.
Let me hit you some more historical data, right? Like, mm-hmm. So Ed Greenwood makes up the Forgotten Realms, right?
Sure.
The reason TSR buys the Forgotten Realms from Greenwood is specifically to like not have to do any of this work. So it's like, this all exists already, so we don't have to think about it too hard. We will just pull from it. Mm-hmm. On one level, the Forgotten Realms is, like you're saying, this kind of like very tight lockstep, you know, DR, blah, blah, blah. You can go find Ed Greenwood on Twitter like every day still, like clarifying lore questions of it. On the other hand, it's like over there is like the Arabian Nights world, you know what I mean? And over here is like Eastern Europe world, and you know, so there's like this over here is Mesoamerica world, you know, like this is Epcot. And so on one hand it's like this tight materialist history of the Western European fantasy part of it, and then the Epcot individual levels that have been like DLC'd onto it both by him and other people. And so from the emergence point of this thing being adapted and bought by TSR and then later being made like the Keystone World, right, for 5th edition, I just think that like there are radical different investments over the time frame here, and Larian plays in that when it is convenient and maybe dodges that when it's not.
I think that's fair. In any case, we've gone on a divergence. Balthazar stabs Daemalin with the Spear of Night.
Shadowheart in a trial of, I don't know, something. Crisis of faith, maybe. Tickelvar reloads the game over and over and over again to get a 30-point persuasion check over on her to get her to throw the spear away and be her own person, and she does that. And this would probably hit way harder if Tickelvar knew anything really about her.
Yeah.
I basically, and this is, I've mentioned this in previous episodes, I've kept Shadowheart in the party up to this point because I was interested in her seeing this stuff and doing it. We can talk about it more later on too when there's some kind of follow-up conversations after Act 2. But I was interested in this point. Shadowheart will change her life a little bit after this point.
So after I stab Daemalin, she has this long monologue about like, I'm going to get my revenge on you when you're old and gray. Like when you're old and your hair is wiry and you got a long nose and you're like, you can barely hold your bladder at night. I'm going to come for you. And like, she's trying to be real scary.
Yeah.
And then she like calls me a Char follower and I'm like, oh, I'm way worse than that. And then she's like, oh, so you're just like in it for the blood sport? And I'm like, I'm in it to kill Kethric Thorm. And there is like a line where she's like, oh, well, maybe you are like the inoculation. Maybe you're the thing that's even worse than the disease that can like kill the disease. And so she completely forgives me. And then I like free her. And then we probably get the exact same cutscene of her like materializing divine armor and a divine sword and then flying the hell out of the Shadowfell.
So you didn't get to kill her?
Material. No, she's unkillable.
Period.
Well, there is a, before I stab her, right? Mm-hmm. There is a line of the narrator saying, you wonder whether you're the person that's meant to wield the Spear of Night. But I did stab her, and maybe this is one of the reasons why I had a different interpretation of the ritual of the Dark Justiciar. After I stabbed her with the Spear of Night and she like momentarily dies and then immediately comes back, I have a new tag, like a character tag in my character sheet that says Dark Justiciar.
Huh.
I got that tag from stabbing her.
Gotcha. So, yeah. So, maybe that was always the final thing.
Yeah.
Huh.
Wild.
That is wild.
I stab her. She tells me, I'm so angry at you and I'm going to kill you. And then I say, oh, but I want to kill Kethric Thorm. And she's like, oh, well, free me. And then I freed her.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. And that was the mega dungeon. That was the biggest dungeon in the game. And we are going to finish Act 2 next episode. It is just an absolute amusement park ride of a variety of boss fight and set pieces from here until the beginning of Act 3.
There's some stuff.
There's some
stuff. I'm not mad about the stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm not mad. It's just, it's a lot compared to what we were experiencing in Act 1.
Yeah.
Feels like a different game.
Yeah. Well, like the plot's got to kick in, huh?
Sure. We'll talk about it after we finish Act 2. But you're right. The plot has to kick in. We've got to get the plot going here. Mm-hmm.
So many dozens of hours that you can do before you have to like introduce a villain or like a broader set of circumstances.
Yeah. Although, let me give you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in its favor, and we'll talk about it next time, but in its favor, it's kind of doing a Baldur's Gate 1, which is like, you don't really know what's going on in that game for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Although I will say it feels a little less like Baldur's Gate 1 and more like, no, that's unkind. I was about to say, imagine if Minecraft, the first 20 hours, you were just playing Minecraft, OG Minecraft, the kind that was mm-hmm. free to download. And then after 20 hours and you like hit some gate about like having a certain number of, diamond equipment, there's mm-hmm. like a whole plot that happens. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's extreme. That's not the case. There have been, in the same vein, I think that your comparison is apt, in the same way that like the Iron Crisis is like this background fact about the world that kind of propels you towards an eventual plot, that's happening in Act 1 with respect to at the personal level instead of at the political or social level of the Iron mm-hmm. Crisis. It's the tadpole in your brain. So, but yeah, we'll the plot will be fully engaged next episode, and I look forward to seeing all our view listeners there.
Patreon.com/RangeTouch in order to support the show. At $5 a month, you can hear Danny and I doing the Range Touch monthly podcast, as well as a bunch of other stuff. You should go check that out. Patreon.com/RangeTouch. Hit subscribe if you haven't subscribed to us here on YouTube already, and hit that like button. Leave us a comment also that helps us with the algorithm. You can just comment and say the word algorithm. That's perfectly fine. But you can also answer a question for us. Danny, what's the question for this episode?
Are you confident that you can provide a perfectly accurate timeline of all of the events that led up to the Shadow Curse Lands, Moonrise Tower's history, and the imprisonment of Dame Aelin? Do you feel like, please tell me if you have completely figured that out and you think we're fools for not.
Now, notably, we don't want you to explain it. We just need you to answer yes or no with no additional content. Do you think you can do it?
This is a poll. It isn't an explanation.
It's just a poll. Just say yes or no. Don't explain it. Just say yes or no. Looking forward to a bunch of no's in the chat. All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks with the ending Act 2, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Ciao.
Alrighty.
Wise. We'll be right back. yourself the mighty.